Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yesterday, the Savage Nation opened with more news from the Bernie Madoff ripoff. This time, Savage exposed the Madoff judge, Ronald L. Ellis. Savage believed he should recuse himself because some of the organizations he had worked for made money from the Madoff investments. Next, Savage made fun of our nation of idiots that get their news from Yahoo. And the story, the second most researched topic on Yahoo News for 2008, was Kaylee Anthony. Makes you wonder if the mainstream media looks to Yahoo News searches to determine what stories they highlight. If you're smart, then you are unemployable in America. Anyone who is smart is a danger to the power structure. Savage discussed the positives and negatives of being a genius. He mentioned his love for the movie The Godfather and how the life story of Vito Corleone mirrored his own father's life story minus the crime. Savage talked about how he doesn't have any friends, and as you get older, it is difficult to have true friends. He frequently likes to talk to the man on the street. Savage played a clip from The Godfather in which Hyman Roth tries to escape to Israel and get asylum to avoid prosecution. Savage mused on whether Bernie Madoff might try this same thing. Savage made fun of the Brinks home alarm commercials. The only alarm Savage feels one should have is a Remington. What will Michael say today? Find out now on The Savage Nation.
And thank you, Beowulf and team, for a wonderful summary of yesterday's serial in the ongoing saga serial called The Savage Nation. There is quite a bit to talk about today. It's astonishing what I watched today. In fact, I was jumping up and down. I believe we are entering the ex-Soviet Union faster than even I believe possible. When I watched Obama, the incoming president, give a so-called presentation of his so-called intelligence chiefs, and I saw that he looked down to his notes to call upon various news people. In other words, he didn't look out into the crowd of reporters and pick them randomly, as most presidents seem to have done. Instead, Obama looked down and picked reporters according to a pre-selected list of reporters. Immediately, the first question was a stooge question, not about Leon Panetta's lack of qualifications, not about does this man have the ability to protect us in a time of terror, not about why are you picking used Clinton tires for the new Obama bus, but the reporters that he picked pre-selected immediately turned the topic to the economy. And I believe that just as in the days of the Soviet Union, where the official newspaper of the communist government was called Pravda, as you know, Pravda is the Russian word for truth, I think we have entered the same era here in America today, where there's almost no deviation from official state policy. And although we have the appearance of a free media, complete with commentators, columnists, and press conferences, what we really have is a state-run government media complex. We have entered the world of Pravda. But then it got worse. I had a wonderful time eating my lunch today in front of the television, watching what I think is a truly madman, Blagojevich. In fact, it was so funny that I wrote a poem, since he likes the quote verse. I wrote a verse about Blagojevich. I mean, if you haven't seen the governor of Illinois, who was impeached today, give a speech about cripples and wheelchairs and cancer and how he said it looked like Lourdes Cathedral filled with illegal aliens who he personally saved. I never saw anything like this. Here is a man who, instead of stepping down with some degree of dignity, wheels out a family, two families, a man in a wheelchair, He tells you about kidneys that he got for them and livers that he got for them. And he says he's being impeached because of this, because he was such an honest guy. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I don't know whether the guy's crazy or he actually thinks that little of the American people. But then again, it is Chicago. And so I think that his view of Chicago may actually be apt. I mean, remember what Chicago is and what it's produced. Just that he doesn't understand that the rest of the country may not be what Chicago seems to be. Listen to clip five. Here's Blagojevich talking about the Golden Rule.
In my view, those of us who make the rules ought to be able to follow a simple lesson that I was taught to believe in Sunday school, called the Golden Rule, that you should do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And for those of us who make
the rule... Thank you. All right. Well, okay. That's very interesting. So you get caught on tape, according to the prosecutor, saying, F this, F that, you owe me this, sell the seat, sell to that, sell to this, sell to that. I'm not giving it away for blanking nothing. And you wonder why the people think you're crazy? Blagojevich rhymes with itch. He can be quite a stitch. He plays the victim, marches shills, gives reporters, not crowds, their thrills. Blagojevich got caught his hand in till. He now quotes poets who make land fill. Blagojevich, his hand in till, using illegals to act as shills. This one I saved from cancer, that one a kidney I got. Yet those evil politicians, my friends last year, would not give the poor, not even their ear. Blagojevich, which rhymes with itch, has run himself into a ditch. Now, I'm working on another poem about Blagojevich, if you want to help finish it with me. There was a young man from Chicago who tried to unload some cargo. Unable to be terse, he fell back on verse. So if you have a couple of good verses for Blagojevich and you want to get in on the fun, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I could think of a few others. I mean, you know, the Elvis look, the hair. There's a couple of things we could do. This will live, if America survives 50 more years as a republic, I think that the age we're living in now with the Blagojevich scandal, with the inexperienced, way over his head, Obama using all old Clinton retread tires in a time of terror will be an age that people will remember for a very long time. That's if we surprise it. Survive it, excuse me. 1-800-449-8255. I mean, you would think that one reporter would have asked Obama, how in the world can you appoint X to Homeland Security, Y to the Justice Department, and Z, a CIA chief who has absolutely no knowledge of intelligence? How in the world can he pick a man for Homeland Security who is a governor who has no experience whatsoever with international terrorism? How can he pick a man, Eric Holder, to be attorney general who took the lead in pardoning Puerto Rican terrorists? How can he round out his national security team with Leon Panetta? Leon Panetta, the former chief of staff to Bill Clinton. Leon Panetta, a liberal through and through. Leon Panetta. Leon Panetta, a man with absolutely no intelligence experience to speak of. Leon Panetta. And that's at least worthy of a question from a free press. But there was not one question from a free press. After the inexperienced Obama read the script introducing these retreaded Clintonites, he did not look at the audience of reporters and say, Bob or Jill or this or that. He looked down on a piece of paper and he pre-selected the names. Or rather, he read the names of reporters who had been chosen in advance to ask questions that were written for them in advance. In my opinion, we have entered a very dangerous era in America, an era where the ex-Soviet Union and the America become one. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I saw the harbor lights. They only told me we were parting.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. This is too sappy for me. Turn it off. Harbor Lights. We have sound today. I could spend an hour or two just on the madness that's going on in America from the staged press conference today of Barack Obama, who didn't take any questions that were not pre-prepared, to Blagojevich, who it looked to me like a madhouse. You cannot believe what this looked like if you haven't seen it. All he talked about, he had people up there with wheelchairs and kidneys and livers. And all it was about was that he was trying to give them all health insurance and that's why he's being impeached. He didn't once mention the charges against him. I don't understand what's going on in the country, how the press lets them get away with it. In a free nation, they would have screamed out while this Blagojevich was talking. Somebody would have asked Obama about the lack of credentials for whatever his name is, Leon Panetta. They certainly would have said it. Where's the big mouths all of a sudden now that we need? The ones that would scream at Bush. Where's the big mouth who used to scream from ABC, Mr. President? Where are they today? They should be ashamed of themselves. The press is supposed to be our watchdogs. They're supposed to keep politicians on balance. And they're lapdogs. It's frightening. It gets worse, though. I'm going to play some more from you from other people today. It's like a meltdown all of a sudden. Chicago, Tony, you're up. Go ahead. Tony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, my pleasure. I've been trying to get in touch with you for the past couple of days. I listen to you every day. I was going to talk about weed and all of this, and I couldn't get through. But anyhow, in reference to, he has done something here that I really have to applaud him for. Because they're trying to hang him, and the people that are trying to hang him are just as bad, if not worse.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. He's threatening them back. It was full of subtle threats aimed at Obama's chief of staff and Obama himself. I heard that.
Mike?
Yeah, did you hear what I just said, or are we losing each other?
Yes, sir, and I agree with you. And I, you know what? You make.
But wait, before we go on, but you do agree that Blagojevich is not kosher in this regard, is he?
Sir, he is as guilty as sin. Okay.
But wait a minute. He's as guilty as sin. In other words, F in this, F in that, sell this, sell that. But you're saying he's no different than the other people that he's talking about.
But he's not as bad as. As a matter of fact, when his Lisa Madigan two weeks ago called, was on the airwaves and was calling for his impeachment, I tried to get through to Lisa Madigan to say, "Listen,
Tony, let me ask you again. What do you say you call him in Chicago? What name does he have? Why?"
Well, because we think he's scum. Okay.
But what is this guy? Why is this guy continuing to put up a front as though he is innocent? Doesn't he recognize that the rest of the world are not the illegal aliens in Chicago who put him in power who don't understand English? Is he that insulated from reality to actually think that the greater world outside Chicago? Look, Chicago flooded in millions of illegal aliens, and that's why you have the low-life Democrats that you have there. It's the same in every other major city. The reason they flood in illiterate, low-life people from around the world is because they can pull the wool over their eyes. But anyone who speaks the rudiments of English know that the guy is A, as guilty as sin according to what they think is going on here, and B, the guy is laughable.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, Michael, I've lived in this city from the day I drew breath. I've been here 74 years, except for 16 rotten months of my life that I spent in Korea, which was hell on earth. But anyhow, I have watched all the political structure in this city for many years. I was involved in it in a way, and people have told me, Tom, why don't you sit down and write a book? Okay? Why don't you write a book?
Well, maybe you should sit down and dictate. Start with this. Forget the writing. Many people can't write easily, but they can talk. Sit down and start telling your stories. You care to tell us a story with anonymous names?
That's exactly what I would need. I need a writer.
No. Right now, right here, right now in the Savage Nation. Tell me the worst story you want to tell about Chicago politics.
Okay. I was working for a major, major company. I was in a management position. I had 40 salespeople underneath me. I started with this firm when two Jewish lawyers put this firm together back in 1980. I was with another company at that time. And one of these lawyers.
What's the worst thing that happened in the story, Tony? It's a long story. Most people don't. You know, you got to. What's the bad thing that happened?
All right. Here's the bad thing. I was working for this company. They sold their end of the company to a big insurance company, one of the largest in the.
Right, but how does politics fit into this?
Here's how it fits in.
I'll tell you what, Tony. Hold that thought. Put it in writing. and send it to us, because it's a long story, probably very interesting. There once was a man from Chicago. It's an amazing story. But wait, it gets even better. It gets even better. I got another soundbite for you. If you think the politicians are bad, how about the people in the media? Here is Pat Buchanan, who finally is showing his true colors. I don't know whether the uniform that he used to try on in his back room is now, so one day he's going to appear on MSNBC in the SA or the SS uniform. I'm not quite sure which one it is that he would most qualify to be wearing. But as you know, for years I defended Pat Buchanan. I had people telling me that he was a Jew hater through and through. I said, nah, don't be silly. Pat has his views and we disagree, but he's a great guy. I could not believe what Pat Buchanan said today. It's something that you would expect from the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And here's Pat Buchanan on MSLBGT, clip 16.
The Israelis have been hit for 6 months with these little rockets, which didn't kill anybody. It was outrageous, cruel, and stupid. And they triggered a blitzkrieg against the Palestinians in Gaza, which in my judgment is an Israeli concentration camp, where 1.5 million people are locked up, cannot come out or go in. They've been controlling food, electricity, fuel, and the innocent people in Gaza are the ones suffering.
So Pat Buchanan, who has posed as a fair-minded conservative, now says Gaza is a concentration camp. Well, let me remind them what a real concentration camp is. They had names such as Treblinka, Buchenwald, and others. Now, I would expect more from Pat Buchanan, but I, for years, defended this man until last year when he wrote his scurrilous book, which said things I couldn't believe any sane man would write. He said that Hitler didn't have any desire to attack America. Lie, Pat. They were building the Super America bomber to bomb America. One thing after another that he said in his book were lies. Now the man comes out and compares Gaza to a concentration camp? I don't know how this rotten, stinking sub-network, MSNBC, can keep a man like this on their station. It's bad enough having that psychopath on there with the leg problem, the one who urinates underneath the desk every night with the glasses, that if you actually, he needs diapers underneath his desk. But to have this creature on, I don't understand it.
Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. As Aristotle is said to have said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. Since we're being raped by the administration with lies, and we're being raped by local politicians with lies, we're being raped by the bankers with lies, and raped by the Treasury with bailouts for their friends, we may as well just simply have fun and enjoy it. Then we turn on MSSNBC. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, MSSNBC with Pat Buchenwald Buchanan today, who should certainly know better than to say Gaza is a concentration camp. I mean, he could say that he has sympathy for the Palestinians. He could say the Israelis overreacted. But he knows it's not a concentration camp. I mean, Pat Buchenwald Buchanan is a man of history. And I think that MSSNBC really ought to be ashamed of themselves, but I've long ago come to understand that they have no shame, which is why they have a man who apparently urinates on himself every night underneath the desk while pretending to smirk at people he doesn't have the guts to face with his own, you know, Clark Kentish look for fear the glasses will be knocked off his face. And I understand they have to put a extra box of the pens under his desk every night as he smirks his way through a show. Anyway, what do you want to talk about? Wait, we have something else for you if you think this is bad. It's going to get much worse, by the way, before it gets better, as my father was known to say to me. He used to say to me, if you think things are bad, you're right, but they're going to get worse before they get better. Here is what passes for an actor who plays tough guys, who plays mean, tough men of the street. Who I don't have words for this guy, Sean Penn, who has to be one of the craziest people in Hollywood. And I'm going to run a contest right now. Here is Sean Penn stumbling through his acceptance speech last night at the so-called Critics' Choice Awards. And I want to run a contest. As you listen to Sean Penn, I'm going to ask you, what drug or drug combination do you suppose Sean Penn could have been on to explain this speech? Play it.
I thank the broadcast critics for including me in this incredibly prestigious group of actors, all of which I've just been such a tremendous fan of, and I will trust that you understand that at heart this is a beauty contest, so I had an advantage. I have to thank Gus Van Sant. And then to the guy who would have been my first choice to play the lead in this movie, Harvey Milk. He had the charisma that an actor could only aspire to, and so thank you, Harvey. Thanks.
So as you well know, because Sean Penn is a very clever politician, he chose a radical homosexual mayor and the story about the radical homosexual mayor with a revisionist history about this homosexual mayor. And, of course, is being nominated by the homosexuals in the film business for every award known to mankind. They're entitled to do that. It's their trade. It's their guild. They can do whatever they want. I'm not shocked by that. But I'm stunned by Penn's inability to finish a sentence. And I'd like to know, since we've been talking about drugs over the last few days, and I'm not accusing him of being on drugs, of course, but what drugs does his speech pattern indicate an individual may have been on? Well, let's put it to you another way. If Sean Penn were playing a character who was on drugs and using that speech pattern in the act, what drugs do you suppose he would be mimicking to have been on? I think that says it the way. Well, it gets even better while you're calling me at 1-800-449-8255. Even better now. Richard Gere, as you well know, the man who likes small furry creatures, one of the most astonishingly empty individuals in the history of Hollywood, which is well known for its emptiness, got up there last night and said things that are beyond comprehension in clip 24.
But with this new administration, I think we can recapture that innate instinctive feeling that we really can genuinely care for and love each other. Everywhere on the planet. Everywhere. And no one is outside of that embrace. Nobody. Everyone gets it. We don't hold it back from the bad guys, from the guys with the wrong color, the guys that live in the wrong places. Everybody gets that.
No, we understand that Gare doesn't hold it back from the bad guys. We understand that he doesn't hold his embraces back from the guys of the wrong color or the guys who live in the wrong places. We understand that he likes rough trade. But that's not the issue. Does this man actually mean that he would hug Hannibal Lecter? Does this man actually mean he would hug Osama bin Laden in a cave in Baziristan? Is this man totally insane? I don't have an answer for this. I don't know if they're crazy or what. I don't understand what explains these people. Listen to what these people are talking about. That we should love each other and everywhere on the planet we should love each other and no one outside of our embrace. We shouldn't hold it back from the bad guys. You mean he would go and he would hug who? Who would he hug? Who would he hug? This man is nuts. And the amazing thing is that they still make movies. Speaking of the movies, on michaelsavage.com, I linked up an incredible set of pictures from the New York Post, which is a wonderful scandal sheet and has some good articles, by the way. And on the bottom, we linked up the worst celebrity beach bodies. And the reason I put it up there is because when I saw the picture taken of Clint Eastwood and the picture taken of Dustin Hoffman and the picture taken of Harvey Weinstein, where he looks like a fat hamster with small hands, I actually felt good about my body. I realized I'm in better shape than all three of them put together. You know, we all have problems with our bodies, but you don't realize that without makeup, without lighting, without corsets, without camera angles, not only do they look like us, but most of them look worse than we do. You understand what I just said to you? You got to see this. I couldn't believe, you know, look, you got to look at these. They're just ordinary mortals. But the funny thing here is that when you see actors without the makeup, there's a girl with cellulite in her behind. I don't know who she is. The woman really has to take the cloth. This woman has to go to a nunnery. I never heard of her. But after this picture is published, it's the end of the road. I never saw anything like this. Who is this person? Does anyone know who this is? Tara Reid? My God, it's horrible. How could this woman get up in the morning? Then there's Harvey Weinstein with a undershirt. He actually looks like Bernie Ward wading into the ocean or running away from the police. But no, it's actually Harvey Weinstein, famous film something or other. And as I say, he looks like a porcupine with or he looks sort of like a porcupine or a hamster with very small hands and thin arms. Then there's the picture of Dusty Hoffman, who likes to play Jewish gangsters. But I tell you the truth, you look at the guy in the picture. Oh, my God, Dusty, I could arm wrestle this guy to the ground. I'm in much better shape than he is, thank God. Then there's some count on roller skates. I don't know who he is, Prince Frederick von Anhalt. To me, looks like some gonif who has a hedge fund somewhere in Austria that he ran away from. I don't know what's on his arms there. It looks like a combination of an S&M act and tefillin. I don't know what he has on his arms. Then the poor women, though. How do they get these pictures? Oh, my God. Who's this woman, Janice Dickinson? She looks like an aunt I had 50 years ago. God rest her soul. She's gone to her reward. But the thing is that when they're on the screen, they all look so good. How does this happen? That's why we're focusing on this today, because it's all an illusion. That's why we love movies, because they're fake. They're an illusion. So yet Sean Penn gets up there and gives a speech that is totally insane. Richard Gere gets up there and says we should love everybody. And no one should be outside. Play Richard Gere again, 24.
But with this new administration, I think we can recapture that innate instinctive feeling that we really can genuinely care for and love each other. Everywhere on the planet. Everywhere.
Well, that I agree he does as much as he can. That we know most people in Hollywood believe they can love each other everywhere on the planet. I mean, that's where the mantra, why not do it in the road, came from. So in that regard, I don't think he's fibbing. But it gets crazier after that. Let's hear it.
I thank the broadcast critics for including me in this.
Is he acting here? Is this Sean Penn fumfering away through it?
All of which I've just been such a tremendous fan of. And
Hold it. There's a certain shake in his voice that indicates to me if he were acting a guy on a certain drug, what drug would he be acting he is on? That's the way I did it. That's what I wanted to say. Something's wrong with this. There's something wrong with the whole delivery for me to believe he's not pretending to be on a certain drug, because we know he wouldn't use drugs. We know a man as brilliant as this, a man who visits important world leaders like Hugo Chavez and important, wonderful humanitarians like Fidel Castro and the other murderer in Cuba. A man as important as this would never use drugs, so that's a given. Chuck in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation. What do you think he would be acting? What drugs would he act that he is on?
Yeah, Sean Penn, I think he's got some alcohol working there, maybe half a Valium, and I think some cocaine, too.
Well, now remember, I'm sure he is not on drugs, Chuck. I am saying something quite different. We know what a fine actor he is, and he's only acting as though he's on drugs. So you're saying he's acting as though he's on alcohol, Valium, and cocaine.
Yes, that would be it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's play along with Mike here. Sacramento, Josh, what drugs do you think Sean Penn is acting he is on in this speech?
I think Mr. Penn is diluted with some methadone and a couple hits of some cocaine.
Well, again, he's acting as though he's on methadone and cocaine. Is that how the voice sounds on those drugs?
That's a hard sell for me, Mike. Look at his eyes and you look at the way he acts. That looks like a man that's diluted to distant, kind of glossy, little red around the edges.
What man takes children from a safe white suburb to visit the murderer Fidel Castro and says to Fidel Castro as he leaves in a private jet, I'm teaching my children to be revolutionaries? Now tell me, are those the words of a sane man?
Negative. A man who loves Hugo Chavez are not the words of a sane man. I bet you he got his drugs from Danny Glover. Aren't they both in the same boat?
Well, again, I'm positive he's not on drugs. I'm positive that as fine an actor as he is, he's only acting as though he might be on drugs in order to appeal to the people in Hollywood, because we know he's a straight-up borders, language, culture American, Josh.
Yes, sir. I apologize,
yeah.
Mr. Savage.
Yeah, you got to be careful here, you know. I know how to work this game pretty good. But now I got to go back to the gerbil man, Richard Gere, because the clip 24 I played about loving each other everywhere on the planet and everyone, we certainly know that he practices what he preaches. That's a given. I mean, that's another story. I mean, for Richard Gere to say we should love each other everywhere on the planet and everywhere and everyone, That's one thing. But, you know, Richard, you could control it and limit it to not jump species here. I'll be right back. Savage.
I grew up in a time like a lot of people here, and it was Vietnam. And we instinctively, innately felt we could change the world. There was no doubt about it. And we did. We changed the world. And then something happened. It all became selfish and rancid and silly and stupid. And we ended up with the last 8 years that we've had in this country, which is almost over. We have a few days left. But with this new administration, I think we can recapture that innate instinctive feeling that we really can genuinely care for and love each other. Everywhere on the planet. Everywhere.
And all right, Richard Gere practices what he preaches, obviously, when he says we love each other everywhere on the planet and with everyone. But I would only hope that he would limit it to upright organisms. But then it gets even crazier. He is Sean Penn, stumbling through his acceptance speech last night at the 14th Annual Critics' Choice Awards. Listen to 25.
I thank the broadcast critics for including me in this incredibly prestigious group of actors, all of which I've just been such a tremendous fan of. And I will trust that you understand.
All right, let's stop right here. This man needs to either understand that the world is not Hollywood. The world actually hears him. And now if he's pretending to be on drugs, which I hope he is, what drugs do you suppose he's pretending to be on? WTNT, Kyle, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. What he's talking, that's characteristic of, stimulants, cocaine, methamphetamine, or maybe he's all hopped up on... he could be acting like he's all hopped up on antidepressants and it really dries your mouth up and makes your train of thought not so straight. I remember you talking about Nancy Pelosi when she was smacking her lips on some video.
Let's leave her out of it. Let's just focus on him for the minute. This sense of a racing speech where he can't connect the thoughts fast enough is the mark of a very good actor pretending to be on a certain kind of drug. I'm just trying to figure out how good he is. I can't imagine what drugs he's pretending to be on. Because we know that a man who is in such esteemed company as Fidel Castro, Raul Castro, and Hugo Chavez would never use drugs. That we understand, correct?
Oh, of course.
Yes. And so we know he wouldn't be using drugs. And a man who takes children from the safe white suburbs to visit a mass murderer like Fidel Castro and then says to Fidel Castro on the way out of the country, I'm training my children to be revolutionaries. We know a man like that wouldn't use drugs. So that's a given. I'm just saying, since he's such a great actor, up for so many awards for playing the, let us say, out-of-town homosexual Harvey Milk, we have to ask ourselves, what drugs is he pretending to be on? That's what I'm trying to get to here. He's so good. I want to know what he's pretending to be on. Lance in San Francisco, do you want to guess?
Yes, Dr. Savage, I think there are three classes of drugs that might be involved there. The first would be the antipsychotics. I think he's off the antipsychotics.
Oh, stop. You mean he's acting as though he was once on them, and now he's acting as though he's off them? That's really good.
Yeah, so he's off them, and then he's simultaneously on a stimulant and a depressant.
So he's such a good actor that he's acting as though he's a guy who was on antidepressants and came off them, and now he went on to stimulants.
It's a phenomenal portrayal.
It's unbelievable. Are you an expert in the field?
Certainly not.
So do you know this from experience, this kind of acting?
Let's just say that I'm guessing.
Okay. Oh, you're better than I am. Thanks for the call. It's amazing to me. Last night I woke up at 4:12 a.m. Now, my producer, Beowulf, I told him I was up all night. I couldn't go to sleep. He says, wait a minute. He said, what time did you say? I said, 4:12. He said, wait a minute. He woke up, and he lives in another state, at 4:12 a.m. So I said, what the heck is going on? What happened last night at 7:12 a.m. on the East Coast? What happened at 4:12 a.m. on the West Coast? And I started to think, and I really got whacked out here. The number 12 kept coming up. Now I'm watching all these science shows that say that a comet, the Mayan calendar ends in 2012. Nostradamus predicted that the world comes to an end in 2012. And that everything's going to end in 2012. So saying, what? Maybe that kept me up before 12, because I got a lot to do before the world comes to an end. I mean, I got to get my papers in order. But on the other hand, the other way to look at it is this. In other words, if it's all going to be Earth and upheaval, with a comet or a meteorite, rather, striking the Earth and wiping everything out, all it wouldn't matter if my papers are in order, right? So therefore, there's nothing for me to do if the world comes to an end in 2012. It's an amazing, it's like that Irish linen limerick that I have on my wall when I really get depressed that I look at. You know, I'm going to get it for you during the break because I don't want to, you know, mangle it. I'll find it somewhere. But it's like, if the world is going to come to an end in 2012, what are you going to worry about? You know, there's a COVID hits, everything's wiped out, all life except the slime mold and the people on MSSNBC. And maybe a few creatures survive in Hollywood because they're stronger than cockroaches. And they live on into the future breeding with each other. I don't know. Whatever. But the point is, if all life is wiped out except for the slime molds in Hollywood and on MSSNBC, what's the point of getting my papers in order? I may as well just wait for it and, hey, there it is. I mean, you know, you go out with a bang. You know, what's the difference? What can I do about it? Did anyone else wake up at 12 a.m.? I'm going to say 0.12 a.m. wherever you are in the country. I don't know what's going on. Did something happen at something 12 a.m. last night, like 7:12 a.m. in the morning in New York? Was there an earthquake in Manhasset, Long Island? I mean, what happened back there? I don't know. Something's going on in the world. 1-800-449-8255. I know what's going on here. It's Rock and Roll Friday, so play Danny and the Juniors on the way out the door on the Savage Nation, because I'll be back with more right here as long as we play some rock and roll music before I have a heart attack asking for Danny and the Juniors playing rock and roll on the Savage Nation.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. We're playing a little Bobby Darin, not rock and roll per se, but from the era, the high collars, the cufflinks, the whole deal, the Gratazura. Yeah, where are they now that we need them? You know, so today, Blagojevich, Rod Blagojevich. I didn't know this guy from a hole in the ground. Governor of Illinois is a big job. It's a huge state filled with illegal aliens in Chicago, and I never knew why they flooded them in there. But Rod Blagojevich indicates to me why they flooded them in there. It explains how Dianne Feinstein became a mayor, then a senator. It explains so many things about big cities and the lowlifes in high places. They have illegal aliens who don't really understand English, and they get away with murder by throwing them benefits they're not entitled to. So today, here's Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is impeached, and he gets up and gives a speech in front of a man in a wheelchair, another one with a liver transplant, another one with a heart, and if it wasn't for me, they'd be dead, and that's why they're impeaching me, without referring an iota to the actual issues of the day. And then he does clip five, where he talks about the golden rule again with his, what his mother taught him in Sunday school. Listen to this.
In my view, those of us who make the rules ought to be able to follow a simple lesson that I was taught to believe in Sunday school.
Right. I don't know. Okay, thanks. Rod, come on, man. You're a smart guy, but it's not playing, you know, outside of Cairo, Illinois, for God's sakes. I don't know what's coming next, but maybe he'll quote that older comedian who said that when he grew up, they were so poor, if I weren't a boy, I wouldn't have had anything to play with. I mean, maybe that's the next thing he's going to do when he gets up there. He's going to go into absolute Catskillian slapstick, because this is getting hilarious with his poetry. And, you know, one week it's one poet, then it's Shelley, then it's Keats. It's unbelievable to me. But he's becoming a man who has to understand that outside of the illegal alien environs of Chicago, the guy looks like a lunatic. Then, on top of it all, it's so humorous out there that President-elect Barack Obama announces new appointees for American intelligence services and takes fake questions from fake reporters without looking at them. He looks down at his notes and he says, blah, 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 you're called. Blah, 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 you're called. Blah, 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 you're called. And immediately they don't ask him anything about Leon Panetta's lack of qualifications for the job. Instead, they switch it right away to the issue of the bailout money. And I couldn't believe what I was watching. But then it got even worse. It even got even worse today, or better, depending upon which way you're looking at it. Pat Buchanwald Buchanan on MSSNBC now says that the Palestinians are living in a concentration camp. Listen to clip 16.
The Israelis have been hit for 6 months with these little rockets, which didn't kill anybody. It was outrageous, cruel, and stupid. And they triggered a blitzkrieg against the Palestinians in Gaza, which in my judgment is an Israeli concentration camp, where 1.5 million people are locked up, cannot come out or go in. They've been controlling food, electricity, fuel, and the innocent people.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Pat, I defended you for years. People told me you were a Nazi. I said you weren't. And then after you wrote your last book, I said, uh-oh, there's only one person who would not believe this guy doesn't hate a certain race on the planet, you know, from his childhood and his upbringing and the particular religion he was raised in at that time in those schoolyards. I mean, let's be clear who this guy is. He's a throwback anti-Semite, in my opinion. And there's a female who matches him who was good-looking 15 years ago, who now looks like David Duke after a transsexual operation and still tries to get away with the ha-ha, ho-ho, hee-hee, and basically no one believes her anymore either. It's unbelievable to me what's going on. But wait, if you think that's bad, it gets even better. Barney Frank, you may not know him. He's the guy who... Barney Frank, he speaks like he has a number two cork. And Barney Frank... Now, I'm doing that for definition, just you know who I'm talking about. Here's a guy who created one scandal after another in Congress. Now the guy is so powerful that he's in charge of $700 billion. And now he's talking about the remaining TARP funds, which nobody knows where most of them went. Listen to clip 19.
There were people who scoffed when we said we put this in tranches and there's not going to be the whole $700 billion spent right away, but we'll have a chance to look at it. And a number of people said that was window dressing, and they were wrong. Obviously, this strategy we had of let him do half, but then waiting has worked out, and we intend to say that if they are going to spend the second
season... The strategy has worked out? You mean the economy is fixed, Barney? You mean the way you fixed Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? The way you fixed the male house of prostitution in your apartment when you were a young congressman? What do you mean it worked out? That's insanity! This is what passes for politicians today. So if you look at the political class, the journalist class, the acting class, you understand what trouble we are in. You understand what I'm saying to you? And if you think it's bad now, you're right. But as my old dad Ben said to me when I was a little boy, things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. Maybe that's why I'm getting up at 3 and 4 in the morning lately. It could be also that I'm going to sleep too early. I don't know what it is, but my mother used to say, as you get older, you don't need as much sleep. I'm not that old, though. The truth is, I don't need as much sleep. I think I'm taking too good care of myself. I think I should abuse myself more. That's the problem. I mean, I don't want to curse or anything. I'm too healthy. It's since I went on niacin to control the triglycerides, I have more energy than I've had in my whole life. I'm no longer getting the flushing from it. My prostaglandins have adjusted to it. So I'm taking, you know, enough. I have so much energy from the new blood flow, I don't know what to do with myself. So I'm waking up now 4:12 in the morning, 3:13 in the morning, And I can get a 412, 412, 412. It's probably from watching these darn science shows on the cable channels. Every night now, it's about a meteorite's about to hit. And there's another scientist who proves that in the Jurassic, the dinosaurs got wiped out because a meteorite hit and destroyed all life on Earth, including my dog. I mean, Teddy's ancestors also got wiped out. Horrible thought. I don't mind me going because I wasn't born yesterday, but my dog has to go too in 2012 when the Mayan calendar ends. But then again, the Mayans couldn't have known too much because most of their descendants now, I'm sorry to tell you, holding leaf blowers. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody.
We are talking about the madness of Rod Blagojevich, Obama, and the new Pravda in the United States of America. The stoners, well, people are acting like stoners in Hollywood, but there are other stories out there. Pirates win, U.S. Navy loses. That's right. Here we have the most powerful Navy in the world with squadrons of F-A-18 Hornets, and I've seen them fly. The guys are brave and wonderful. But we have the most inept leadership in the military in the history of this country, in my opinion. I've never seen anything like this. Somali pirates released an oil-laden Saudi supertanker after receiving a $3 million ransom. And our Navy did nothing. I'm just stupefied by it all. I just am shocked. In the World Tribune, Cliff Kincaid asks in a certain way, well, it's my headline, is Kissinger Communist China's U.S. agent? He doesn't say that, I do. Kissinger has always struck me as a very suspicious character. I think he stabbed our troops in the back in Vietnam. It was Kissinger who opened the door to China and has profited, I would think, very, very handsomely from trade with China in the sense that he's the arbiter. This man is the most Machiavellian politician in the history of this country. And now we're asking other questions about him, where he says that Barack Obama will be the new architect of a new world order. What do you mean, Hank, with your weird eyes? I mean, you and Bernie Madoff would make some pair. Katzenberg says Madoff losses dire for his philanthropy. I'm sorry to hear that. But on the other hand, as I pointed out, when the Madoff scandal turned out, it turned out Madoff scandal robbed charities of a lot of money. Almost all the charities were extreme left-wing charities that funded extreme left-wing troublemakers. So, you know, there may be a silver lining in Madoff's work. He could have been, in some way, Madoff may have been, you know, God's hand on earth. You don't know. You don't know how things work. It reminds me of what is good luck and what is bad luck, the old Chinese parable, and I can do a terrible job of imitating it. I'll give you an example of what is good luck and what is bad luck. It's very interesting how it goes, but it goes something like this. A man is working on his farmland in ancient China with his son, and a cavalry comes in from a neighboring province of another warlord, and they snatch his son and conscript him into an army, and he's just heartbroken, and he goes to his neighbor and he says, "What happened?" The neighbor says to him, "What is good luck and what is bad luck?" He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, they took your son away." He said, "Well, I don't know what you mean by that." And the very next day, an earthquake occurs right where his son was working in the field that would have gobbled his son up. And the neighbor comes back and says, "Well, what is good luck and what is bad luck?" That's how it goes. You can make it up any way you want. So you say, well, Madoff robbed all these charities of the money, allegedly. So you say, well, what is good luck and what is bad luck? Well, many of these charities, in fact, I would say 99% of the money the charities gave out were to groups that caused mayhem in the United States of America. You get it? 1-800, whatever. I forget my number already. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Los Angeles, Scott, KGIL. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Michael, I happen to have worked with Sean Penn because I've been in the business for a lot of years. And I got to tell you, I don't think you're listening to anybody who is particularly under the influence. I think what you're listening to is a real guy who has intellectually challenged. And just because these guys can read lines and memorize them does not make them rocket scientists.
I know that. I watch Penn act, and I'm always impressed at what a good actor he is. I enjoy his acting phenomenally. But then I see him off stage. He can't finish a paragraph. without sounding like he's acting as though he's on drugs. He goes to visit dictators and salutes them. He takes his children from a lily-white suburb to meet a mass murderer, Fidel Castro, and then says to Castro on the way out the door, I'm teaching them to be revolutionaries. What is this all about?
Yeah, I don't get it. Literally, you can take, particularly these days, with the newer stars, I'm fortunately on my way towards retirement, but it used to be if the United States went to war, Hollywood went to war. No more.
Oh yeah. Now Hollywood goes to war with the enemy.
Absolutely.
Well, Scott, how did you find that I'm back on KGIL Live in Los Angeles?
Searching yeah. for something decent to listen to. You know, if you're a conservative, and particularly an independent conservative in Hollywood, man, you don't talk. You just keep it to yourself, or you don't work. And that's
well, you know, Scott, I'm glad I have a home back in Los Angeles again. I've been bounced around down in that market a lot. There's no question about it. Politics have been at play for a very long time. But I happen to have a big listenership in Los Angeles. And some of the listeners, I happen to personally know of very, very famous actors who are afraid to, you know, basically come out of the closet.
Yeah, if you do, you're going to be blackballed.
I met with a few of them when I was down there. They will remain anonymous. They're very nice people, and they have to be very careful. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity, Scott. I hope you enjoy reading it over the next few weeks. And I hope to be down in Los Angeles over the next few weeks to my alternate reality down there. I'm one of the people who likes L.A. I'm sort of San Francisco'd out right now. I cannot take the bums anymore. I feel as though it's like the invasion of the body snatchers living in the Bay Area. I have never, ever lived around so many brainwashed people as in the San Francisco Bay Area. They're robots. They're robotic. They have no idea what world they're living in. They're filled with liberal platitudes for every subject on planet Earth. They are putting not only themselves and their community, but the nation itself in mortal danger. Do you understand this? Now you say, well, is LA any better? I got news for you. To use an overused term, diverse. LA is far more diverse politically than the San Francisco area. You talk about a balkanized area, there is no such thing as a conservative politician in the entire Bay Area, let alone all of Northern California. I don't know where they went there. We used to have congressmen who were conservatives, but I could tell you what happened to a few good ones. One of them was knocked out of the box by an investment banker from Wall Street who put his cousin or sister-in-law in, who's turned out to be one of the worst left-wing hags in the history of the Congress. And she's as glued in there as you put crazy glue on her buttocks. I mean, this woman's not leaving, but he bought her the seat. I can tell you the guy's name, but I won't do it. This is a guy who robbed his way to the top of Wall Street and put his cousin or sister-in-law or whatever in there. And now she's been a congresswoman causing one bad thing to happen after another. A sister to Barbara Boxer, politically. There is no representation in the Bay Area for anybody who believes in America. There is only representation for the druggies and the leftists like Richard Gere, in my opinion, who has the nerve to say the things he said last night at the 14th Annual Critics' Choice Awards. We know Richard Gere is basically a stupid idiot from Brooklyn, but I don't know how the man can keep saying these things without someone saying, Richard, you know, change your act, man. You're starting to sound like Blagojevich. I got to play clip 24 again, at least a part of it. Listen to this.
But with this new administration, I think we can recapture that innate instinctive feeling that we really can genuinely care for and love each other. Everywhere on the planet. Everywhere. And no one is outside of that embrace. Nobody. Everyone gets it. We don't hold it back from the bad guys, from the guys with the wrong color, the guys that live in the wrong places. Everybody gets that.
From the embrace? Now, look, Richard, I know you're projecting here. We understand that. We know you don't hold it back from everybody, but you must be fooling. You would embrace Hannibal Lecter? I mean, you'd go to the psychiatric wards where they have mass murders and you embrace them with your love? You would embrace people who kill children? You would embrace child molesters? Are you insane? I don't have an answer for this, but this man still gets bookings. I don't know who goes to his movies. Perhaps the same people who elect Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich go to movies by Richard Gere. Who's that other actor who's now no longer seen anyway? There's another one very much like him from the same era. He made movies that cost hundreds of millions of dollars that bombed. I'm thinking of the guy who played a cowboy, another one from Brooklyn. Does anyone know who I'm talking about? Nah, I can't even remember his name. I keep thinking about them. How do they get through it? Not Robert Redford. He was a has-been in 1963. No. I'll think of it in a minute. I'll come back with the name I'm thinking of. And with the Irish linen.
Set.
Leon is one of the finest public servants of our time, and he's committed himself to this country since he put on the uniform of the United States Army. As a congressman, OMB director, and White House chief of staff,
let's cut it off right here. Everyone knows that Leon Panetta is not qualified to be the head of the CIA. Everybody. It's like the king has no clothes. But you'd expect at least one reporter to say, Mr. President, you know, like Sam Donaldson used to yell out. No one said a word. In fact, nobody was picked. He looked down, Obama looked down at a piece of paper and called out the name of the reporter who he wanted to ask the question. He did this three times, if I remember correctly. And each reporter did not ask a question about the appointments. Instead, he switched it, or she switched it, to something inane, mainly about the economy. And then he said, thank you very much, and left. And to me, it looks as though we're living in a new Soviet era. You talk about a new world order. It looks like an old world order. I think I've seen this show before, and I'd like to be able to walk out. I don't think I'm going to have a chance to walk out on this particular show, which I think we're all about to be living in. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. And I want to thank you for patronizing both the show and the advertisers. It's great to be on this show every day. There are so many great stories, I'll never get to all of them, but we try our best. And right now, I want to go to the callers. The sound bites we've been playing are fabulous. There's another main story that we should talk about. It's the headline on my website that I linked up from the LA Times. Obama's AG choice freed terrorists. It's a huge story. Obama's attorney general choice is a man named Eric Holder. You say, well, who is he? Why should I care? They're all the same. No, they're not all the same. As deputy attorney general in 1999, the man that Obama has picked to be the head of the whole Justice Department, or the attorney general nominee, he pressed subordinates to drop objections to clemency for 16 members of violent Puerto Rican nationalist organizations. And he forced Justice Department officials to drop their opposition to a controversial 1999 grant of clemency to 16 members of two violent Puerto Rican nationalist organizations. It's a major league story. Not one reporter asked Obama about this. I am telling you, I've seen this act before. I've seen this show before. I've seen this movie before. And it is called The Soviet Union, circa 1966. And if you think Obama is a nice guy, you may be right. Unfortunately, the people around him may not be so nice. And the world we are about to enter may not be a very nice world indeed. But the more you hear about niceties, the more you hear about how nice Obama wants to be and believes he is, the less nice this world is going to become for you, the American citizen, particularly if you don't go along with the program. And especially because we have a dictator in the form of Nancy Pelosi who is acting increasingly like a Benito Mussolini, incidentally. Pennsylvania, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I do have some good news for you. The last Nostradamus prediction expired about 10 years ago. So other than the tabloids, there's really nothing to worry about with Minister Thomas.
Oh, so he didn't say that it's going to end in 2012. Thank God. I was trying to get my papers in order.
Yeah, they keep printing the story because there's nothing else, you know, that those type of...
Was he ever right about anything in this century?
Within this century, I'm not sure, though. He got a lot of other ones pretty close.
Right. He wrote about a man named Hitler. I know that he was off. It was close on Hitler.
Right, and so the last one, I believe, was something like September 1999, and after that, there's nothing. And so, you know, in order to continue the story, they just keep making new ones up and talking about losses.
Oh, what about the Mayan calendar ending in 2012? I mean, is that something I should worry about as well? Should I get my papers in order?
That's basically the Mayan version of our Y2K problem. Their system just doesn't roll over, so...
What did they run out of rocks?
their counting system for their calendar just didn't have any.
As I say, they couldn't be that crackerjack at numbers because I'm sorry to say most of the descendants today are holding leaf blowers.
Yeah, well, you know, it lasted for a lot longer than their own civilization did. So,
I know. Look, as I say, the kind of people we have running this government today, I don't think we're going to have to wait eons to see our descendants holding leaf blowers for another nation.
You're right on there.
It's terrible. You know, you could see how previous civilizations came and went. All you got to do is look at the administration that's incoming. Thanks for the call. Leon Panetta as the head of the CIA, a man without any experience in the intelligence community, just passing muster like that. And I guarantee the Republicans are going to roll over. This is going to be a repeat of history where Ruth Bader Ginsburg, chief counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, was ushered right into the U.S. Supreme Court by phony Republicans like Orrin Hatch and Arnold Specter. I know his name is Arlen. I call him Arnold because he reminds me of Arnold Stang. Chicago, Blake, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you were talking about how things seemed really weird last night, and I felt the same way. And I think it just has something to do with the amount of tension that's in the air. If you look at all the protests and what's going on in Israel and Gaza, and I understand.
You know, you may be right. That's true. I mean, the war in the Middle East is certainly something that if you're tuned into the media, you can't turn away from.
Yeah.
And then we had riots here in Oakland, California, because a kid was shot in the back. He shouldn't have been shot. The officer should be tried for murder. There's no question in my mind. But the riots were spurred on by the same gangbangers who were laying on the ground there. See, the gangbangers who were arrested by the police were causing mayhem in the subway. But the cop who shot him in the back committed murder. That doesn't mean that they're not mutually exclusive. You know what I'm saying? But the rioters in the streets, who largely harmed black-owned businesses, incidentally, in Oakland, should have been stopped more forcefully earlier. But again, we have a super liberal mayor in Oakland, California, who has no control over his own city. He's sort of in a dream state. And maybe these things are starting to work on me. I don't know.
I think there's a lot to say for, like, the global conscience.
Certainly, as long as I know it's not global warming that's keeping me awake at night. That's for sure. In fact, there's, like, blizzard conditions coming into the Northeast. And notice Al Gore hasn't been seen. It's an interesting observation. I keep saying it. Whenever there's super cold weather, Al Gore is gone. You never see him. He's gone. He's never giving a speech publicly. Whenever there's ferocious cold, Al Gore is like what's the animal that goes underground? Groundhog. He's like the groundhog of politics, this guy. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. We go to Portland, Oregon, on the great KXL radio station. Bruce, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? Michael?
I don't answer that question, sir. Please make your statement.
Oh, okay. I think you're being too hard on Obama. He hasn't done anything yet. So,
Ho. The man picks Leon Panetta to be the head of the CIA, a man who has no experience in intelligence work. And the reporters who are picked are handpicked in advance and do not ask him questions about that when others are, including others within his own party. Don't you find that to be odd?
I do find that odd. But
Hold on. You haven't heard me attack Obama personally. You never heard me say a bad word about Michelle Obama personally. I wouldn't do that. However, it is my job as a commentator in the media to do what the others in the media who do have access to the president refuse to do because they'll be denied access. And so we in talk radio have an obligation to you, the listener, whether you be liberal or conservative or otherwise, to raise these questions, Bruce. Otherwise, frankly, we're nothing but a waste of your time.
I totally agree with you. You're preaching in the choir here. I understand that. What I'm getting at is he hasn't done anything yet. Wait till he gets in office. I mean, he cannot be any worse than what we had the past 8 years.
All right, listen. On that, I don't really disagree with you. I've said the same thing myself. And Obama was elected as a result of George Bush. Make no mistake about it. George Bush was so inept and his administration so corrupt that we wound up with a man without experience who nobody really knows named Barack Obama. But if we're going to let this man get away with appointing individuals without any questions whatsoever about his appointees, we're going to wind up perhaps in even worse shape. For example, I also raised the issue of Eric Holder being nominated for the Attorney General's position. Certainly you as a liberal who likes Obama want to know why this man, Eric Holder, who pressed subordinates to drop objections to clemency for 16 members of violent Puerto Rican nationalist organizations, of all the people Obama could pick, why is he picking Eric Holder? I mean, that's not an invalid question, is it?
No, it's not. We don't really know why. We don't know the behind-the-scenes decision that he made, to, why he picked that guy, other than the fact that he might be a buddy of his. But, I mean, what's new, right?
Well, hold it. You see what I'm saying? So I'm not being too hard on Obama. I'm asking the questions that the mainstream media is obligated to ask, and they're not asking them.
It's true, but, I mean, we didn't psychoanalyze George Bush when he made his appointments.
I think that we did. I think there were many questions about George Bush, particularly from my show going back to the year 2000. I was tepid about George Bush when he ran against Gore in 2000. I said, okay, it's a blink of an eye, I'll take him over Gore. Looking back, I'm not so sure it would have been worse or better under Gore. They're both totally inept for the position. But I stopped George Bush when he was going to appoint Harriet Myers to the, I think, to be, what was the Supreme Court or Attorney General? Supreme Court. Harriet Myers was his personal attorney going back to Texas. It was this show that said, you're not going to put a nonentity into that position. I did it, Bruce. I was the one who stopped the Dubai ports deal, if you remember. I stirred up so much of a hornet's nest, and that was aimed at George Bush when he was trying to pull that one on us. So I don't think you could say that I was light on Bush.
Well, I didn't necessarily say that, but on the other hand, you called me a liberal, and I'm not a liberal. I actually wanted to vote Republican this year, but I didn't want to vote for an old man in this America.
Right, and speaking of that old, tired war horse, the glue horse, John McCain, where is he now? He's like Kevin Costner. No one's seen him in ages. Thanks for the call. That was the actor I was trying to find that I'd think about before. Kevin Costner is on the same order as the other actor I mentioned before. Where is he lately? I mean, you don't see these guys. How do they get through a day? I can't imagine a man who was once a movie star who hits, let's say, in a certain age. I mean, there are guys who age and still are performing very well and making a good buck, and they're still captivating an audience. You know, I don't have to go. Clint Eastwood can still hold down an audience. He's a fabulous actor and a wonderful director. I don't particularly like his politics, but that's just a matter of opinion. The guy is a great actor and a great director and still can command an audience. The Departed, what's his name? Nicholson, fabulous actor. He's been in a few stinkers, like, what was the one he just did with the dead guys with him in that, what was that movie? Bucket List, horrible. Oh, my God. But when he wants to and he gets a good script, he can do it, like in the Departed. Fabulous actor. He'll be able to act right till the last day that he wants to do it. For example, on the website, MichaelSavage.com. I didn't get to this really yesterday, but I'm going to take a minute or two out of this. There's a singer who I vaguely remember from my childhood. I don't know if the story's still up. I think we dropped it already. His name was Tony Martin. My father liked Tony Martin. I didn't really know. He was like in the same era as Tony Bennett, going back to like Frank Sinatra era, maybe even before. Tony Martin had a great, I think, baritone voice and was a great balladeer. It was an article in the paper yesterday, or 2 days ago, that Tony Martin, who is 96 years old, is performing at a local San Francisco hotel. Here's a man who was married to a wonderful dancer named Sid Charisse. She passed away last year. Normally, by what I've seen, very old people who've lived together in successful marriages, they usually die within a very short period of each other because they become one body, I mean like one being. One finishes the other's sentences. I never see. It's beautiful to behold. The few rare marriages like that is something to behold. It's beautiful to watch. This guy, instead of rolling over and dying and following his deceased beautiful wife to the next world, says that he feels like performing, and he's going to perform at age 96, singing again. Now, you got to remember, Frank Sinatra started to blow his lyrics in his 60s, you know, after a lifetime of heavy alcohol use. And no one's going to condemn Frank Sinatra's talent. The guy is a king among singers. But the man was starting to blow his lyrics in his 60s. He's a guy 96 years old who's performing live. You know, I read that story, and it gave me almost a new lease on life. I'm considerably a lot younger than him. But there are days I say to myself, how much longer can I or what? I don't mean now, you know, I don't mean this year. But how much longer does a person stay in talk radio? How long do you do this? Why should you do this? How long do you perform? Well, you see a guy 96 who can still sing? Then with God's will and your listenership, I got a long number of decades ahead of me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Take my hand, I'm a stranger in paradise.
Oh, lost in a wonderland. A stranger in paradise. I remember this song of my father's DeSoto. Driving over the Kosciuszko Bridge, the Williamsburg Bridge, to work in the dungeon. This he listened to. That he liked. Ah, God bless him. The guy was around forever, 96. God bless this man. He gave me a new lease on life. If I can survive the Pelosi administration and the Obama administration, I'm good for another 35 years. I remember this kind of singing. It was a style of the time. The women loved it. They melted. They melted to this kind of music. For some reason, I mean, it must have been the Benzedrine from the doctors in New Jersey. The diet doctors. That's what they used in those days. I told the story in my book. I turned it off already. The story of the friend's mother. She was crazy from the Benzedrine. The doctors gave them speed right out. You say, oh, we have a crack epidemic. We have a crank epidemic. So we had it in Queens. Half the women were on speed. Only they call it diet pills. That's all. They went right, they went to the doctor. MD gave them a prescription. They were jittery. They sounded like they were presenting an award at the record convention. But in fact, they were driving their pink Cadillacs to Hamburger Express with the Finns. And their children wound up crazy and on pills themselves because the mothers were nuts. All because they wanted to look young and beautiful. That's all. Look, it's a terrible stress. That's why I say, if you look at the pictures that I linked up from the New York Post of the worst bodies on the worst celebrity beach bodies, it gives you you don't need abs after this. You look at these pictures, like poor Clint Eastwood, who is a certifiably great actor, great director. Whoever got this picture of him, I mean, I don't know, man, it's awful. The gut, the flab over the knee, and you realize what you could do if you were blessed, let's say, with millions of dollars of makeup artists and lighting and corsets and camera angles. You know, don't be so hard on yourself, I say to my, you're in better shape than Dustin Hoffman and six out of the guy. I mean, I'm better shape than most of the women in those pictures. So I got to ease up on myself. That's why I had two lunches today instead of one. I just said, heck with it already. Why do you worry? If the world's coming to the end and an end in 2012, according to the Mayan calendar, what are you trying to get your papers in order for? What's the difference? A comet's going to hit the earth every night on the Science Channel. They have a whacked out scientist who shows there's carbon that's extraterrestrial. It isn't from the earth because the atom is a type of atom that can hold things in the middle of the carbon atom as opposed to outside the carbon rings. It's inside the carbon rings. And therefore, it's a different kind of carbon that arrived here from extraterrestrial space in a comet that wiped out all of the dinosaurs and all living things at the end of the Jurassic period. And as a result, there was born poodles or something. I mean, you know. So if it happens again, what's the point of worrying about all these minuscule things, which is what philosophers and poets have been arguing for centuries? You know what I'm saying? At some point, you're going to die, okay? And then they're going to remember you. How long are they going to remember you? I know in the Middle East, in the Muslim lands, they beat each other up over a prophet that died 1,200 years ago. I have no idea why they beat themselves up over the death of a prophet who died 1,200 years ago. I could see celebrating the prophet's words. If it could earn you a buck and makes you a nicer person, it makes you a better person, and you can make a living if you remember the words of the prophet, fine. But why do you have to beat yourself up and make your children bloody and then kill your neighbor because of what the prophet said 1,200 years ago, the descendants of the original? I don't understand this. But then again, to each his own. You know, different strokes for different folks, which is why guys like Richard Gere really ought to limit it to those who are upright and kind of take, you know, back off from those on all four. And Sean Penn, if he intends to be taken seriously by anybody outside Hollywood, what he really ought to do is stop pretending that he's on drugs and coming down off a really bad high with someone who spiked his diet to 7-Up. He really ought to stop that act because it makes no sense to anybody. And Rod Blagojevich has to understand that outside of the precincts that put him in power, the illegal alien precincts of Chicago, the guy is not selling very well. And he ought to stop quoting dead poets.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Leon is one of the finest public servants of our time, and he's committed himself to this country since he put on the uniform of the United States Army. As a congressman, OMB director, and White House chief of staff, he has unparalleled experience in making the institutions of government work better for the American people. He has handled intelligence daily at the very highest levels, and time and again he has demonstrated sound judgment, grace under fire, and complete integrity. Let me be clear. In Leon Panetta, the agency will have a director who has my complete trust and substantial clout.
Why is the press refusing to ask serious questions of Obama? Why do they let him get away with staged press conferences? Are CNN, Fox, and MSNBC the new Pravda? What is the most gutless outlet in the liberal media today? In the days of the Soviet Union, the official newspaper of the communist government was called Pravda. Pravda is the Russian word for truth. Their articles would invariably follow the party line. No deviation from official state policy was ever tolerated. Today, although we have the appearance of a free media, complete with commentators, columnists, and press conferences, what we have in fact is a state-run government media complex. At the so-called press conference given by Barack Obama today, he announced his national intelligence appointments. He introduced the nominees, including the completely unqualified ex-Clinton hack Leon Panetta. Then, without batting an eyelash, he went immediately to a list of pre-selected reporters asking pre-selected questions. There was not a single question from any of these reporters about Panetta's lack of qualifications. There was not a single question about whether an unqualified CIA director would make our nation vulnerable to terrorism. There was not a single question about the opposition within Obama's own party to the appointment of Leon Panetta. Instead, every single pre-selected reporter and question was about the economy, was about the stimulus package, was about a completely unrelated topic. It was glossed over because there is no free media in the United States of America. There is only the United States of Pravda. The government media complex clearly has a set of issues that it is not permitted to touch. But there are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. The Islamofascists are not the only threat to your security. The Russians have been making noises for years now as we've been getting weaker. And now they've cut off the gas to Ukraine and all of Eastern Europe. To talk about this dangerous situation, we have Sally McNamara, a senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. How serious is this? Is this a temporary shutdown?
Well, the situation at the moment is quite serious, even though we look like gas supplies are going to be resumed hopefully later today. But as it stands, Europe is experiencing a particularly cold winter. And just as the sub-zero temperatures set in, Russia's quasi-governmental gas giant Gazprom chose then to turn off the gas taps to Ukraine. Now, this matters to more countries than Ukraine because Ukraine is a major transit corridor for Russian gas into Europe. In fact, 15 countries have been affected because 80% of European gas comes through the Ukraine. We saw gas rationing and school closures in certain countries, and the situation was getting quite perilous as we saw deaths through people suffering from pneumonia. Overall, Europe gets about 40% of its gas and almost a third of its oil from Russia. And Gazprom really has started playing the energy intimidation game quite well. It has specifically targeted many states, but really concentrated on former Soviet states such as the Ukraine, as it seeks to carve out this Russian-dominated sphere of influence for itself. Russia, until now, has tended to be quite reliable in supplying energy to Western Europe. But what this crisis shows is that Europe can no longer afford to stand idly by and hope that Moscow is going to play fair with them. In fact, the EU can no longer afford to appease Russia, which it has done so far. When we saw the Russian-Georgian war in August, for instance, we saw the EU take over the crisis to draw moral equivalency between the two, even though Russia was guilty of an illegal and immoral invasion. In April, at the Bucharest summit last year, we saw the European countries band together to deny the NATO membership action plan to the Ukraine and Georgia, which Russia was dead against. We've also seen President Sarkozy come out and say that the Americans should withdraw from a deal to host missile defense in Poland and the Czech Republic because this is upsetting the Russians. This strategy of trying to appease the Russians really hasn't worked, and Europe can't allow itself to be boxed into a corner when it's dealing with Moscow on these important foreign policy questions. It cannot afford to be scared that Russia is going to turn off the energy taps the way that it is at the moment. Europe, therefore, has to diversify the supply routes, and it must also try to seek reliable alternative sources of energy, such as nuclear power. It must also start coordinating a policy toward Russia that confronts them rather than accommodates them, because Moscow is showing itself to be getting more and more aggressive. We need to look at the issue of energy pipelines as well. Well, I've mentioned the Russian-Georgian war in August, and it was important for a second reason. Russian bombs fell perilously close to the BTC oil pipeline. Now, this is one of the very, very few pipelines that pumps energy around Russia. It doesn't rely on Russia whatsoever. It goes through Azerbaijan, through Georgia, and through Turkey. By Russia sending bombs very, very close to this pipeline, it sought to send Europe the message that if Europe goes about seeking alternate routes, as it is doing at the moment with the proposed Nabucco plan, Russia will challenge that stability, Russia will challenge that security, because it is seeking dominance through a monopoly. And it also wants to bypass countries like Georgia, which it deems to be less friendly to Russian interests. Europe must also diversify its sources of natural gas. Natural gas is clean and it's relatively cheap, and so they should seek to try and get it from other places like North Africa, for example. It should also expand its network of liquefied natural gas terminals, because it can import that energy then from major suppliers such as Qatar and Nigeria. It would also be silly for them just to import gas. They need to really diversify the types of energy it uses and have a wide basket of energy. Things like nuclear power, which it has repudiated because the EU has an obsession with cutting carbon emissions, even though what we see this winter is more people die from cold than they die from heat. It really needs to start looking at the issue of energy security as heavily as it does at the issue of climate change. So the situation right now, we saw EU gas monitors actually arrive in the Ukraine this afternoon. They include some Russians, but it has got a pretty wide mandate to start looking at whether Ukraine is stealing gas, which Russia claims it is and Ukraine denies that it is. And it also will start to monitor that gas is being supplied reliably by Russia and pumped through the pipelines. We're expecting to see shipments resume later today. That is the hope and that is the expectation. But it will still take several days for gas to reach some areas. And we will still, unfortunately, see some crises in countries. So we are still in a very perilous short-term situation. But in the long term, we really need to get our act together with regard to Europe's energy security and really start standing up to the Russians, because appeasing them just simply won't work. And now it's back to you. Thank you.
If someone doesn't stand up now, the Russians could be even more emboldened. Sally, thanks for the great report. Savage. The government media complex has a set of people that is not allowed to touch or criticize. In the ancient caste system of India, untouchables were the lowest order of society. But in the modern American media, the untouchables are those who are not allowed to be criticized in any way, shape, or form. The new untouchables include Barack Obama himself. Don't mistake this for a political honeymoon. It would be one thing to give a new president some slack as he settles in. But to refuse to ask a question about a vital national security issue, to hold back criticism of a president who has made a fatal error in the protection of the United States of America, is not only stupid and ignorant and sheepish, but traitorous, my friends. Barack Obama is not the only new untouchable. We've seen them in the media before. So-called community leaders like the Reverend Sharpton and the Reverend Jesse Jackson, reverends whose divinity degrees no one can seem to find, yet they're referred to with respect as Reverend. There are also the untouchables who are rioting now in Oakland, California. They cannot dare be criticized. A police officer shoots a man, and this gives the drug gangs the right to somehow burn their own neighborhoods, to destroy black-owned stores. In the new liberal era, these new untouchables have been empowered. It's not just in Oakland. In New York City, basic crimes are going uninvestigated. Violent panhandlers there are beyond the reach of the media and the police. The squeegee men that Rudy Giuliani once swept off the sidewalks of New York seem to be coming back in force. And as I walk through the streets of San Francisco, belligerent bums attack pedestrians with impunity. The untouchables have been empowered, and neither police nor the federal government nor the government media pravda complex seems willing to touch them. We've talked about how Caroline Kennedy is trying to get appointed to the Senate by her name alone. She has no real experience. Reporting on this from Boston, here is Daniel Flynn.
Thank you, Michael, for having me. Dan Flynn, author of A Conservative History of the American Left, reporting to the Savage Nation from behind enemy lines here in Boston, Massachusetts, where the natives are stoked that their senior senator has made his triumphant return to the United States Senate. And at the same time Ted Kennedy celebrates his return to the Senate, his niece, Caroline Kennedy, plots her way to get an appointment into the Senate. At this point, it would take an act worthy of a Profiles in Courage Award for David Paterson, the governor of New York, to appoint someone other than Caroline Kennedy to that Senate seat. And as these two stories clash, the old liberal lion of the Senate making his return and the new blood of the Kennedy family trying for a power grab, trying to bully her way into the Senate, a political junkie like myself can't help but juxtapose the political ascendancy of Ted Kennedy 47 years ago and his niece, Caroline Kennedy, today in New York. There are a lot of striking similarities. Take, for instance, the indifference to politics from both of them. And this would come as a shock to a lot of people who were raised on the idea that these Kennedy Camelot myths, where the Kennedys are all about public service. Nothing could be further from the truth. Caroline Kennedy, I'm sure a lot of the listeners of the Savage Nation have come across Caroline Kennedy's voting record. In fact, the New York Daily News put out a report showing that she's voted in about half of the elections that she's been eligible to vote in New York. And in fact, in 1994, she didn't even bother to vote for the Senate seat, for Daniel Patrick Moynihan, for that Senate seat in which he wants David Paterson to appoint her now. And the question is, how can New York Democrats get behind someone who didn't even bother to get behind them on Election Day? She stayed home. And that's the Kennedy way. That's the true Kennedy way. Ask not what a Kennedy can do for you, but ask what you can do for a Kennedy. And that's what Caroline Kennedy is trying to get the New York Democrats to do. You scratch my back, you scratch my back again. And wouldn't you know it? It's that great philosopher, Yogi Berra. It's like deja vu all over again. For anyone who was paying attention when Ted Kennedy came up through the political ranks, this same issue that is dogging Caroline Kennedy now dogged him back in 1962. In fact, in the 16 elections in which Ted Kennedy was eligible to vote when he first ran for Senate, he had only voted in three of those elections. Three. And wouldn't you know it, in each of those three elections, his brother John was on the ballot. And so whenever John Kennedy was not on the ballot, Ted Kennedy didn't bother to vote. And when John was on the ballot, well, Ted Kennedy went out and vote. The second issue in which Caroline Kennedy bears a striking similarity to that young 29-year-old neophyte Ted Kennedy when he first ran for the Senate back in 1962 is their lack of eloquence. Just catch a sentence from Caroline Kennedy to show you how inarticulate this woman is.
You know, I think really this is sort of a unique moment, both in our, you know, in our country's history and in my own life. And, you know, we are facing, you know, unbelievable challenges, our economy, you know, healthcare. People are losing their jobs here in New York, obviously.
And, you know, it was the same thing for Ted Kennedy in his political career. Back in 1980, when he was running for president, this just derailed his candidacy before it got off the ground. Roger Mudd asked Ted Kennedy the most basic, the most softball question for a presidential candidate. Why are you running?
Why do you want to be president? Well, I'm were I to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, there's more natural resources than any nation of the world.
Now, the third issue in which Caroline and Ted bear a striking resemblance has to do with experience. Caroline Kennedy, I would be hard-pressed to come up with any steady employment that this woman has held for a prolonged period of time. I don't know that the woman has ever held a 9-to-5 job like the rest of us. It's a bizarro world that we live in where someone with a last name like that with no credentials can just waltz their way into the Senate. But, you know, it was the same thing when Jack Kennedy vacated his Senate seat, and 2 years later they held a special election for that seat in 1962, and Ted Kennedy first ran for the Senate. It was revealed that the man, Ted Kennedy, had held one paying job in his life. He was a 29-year-old who had held one paying job, and that was a 2-year stint in the Army. And the only reason that Ted Kennedy held that job is because he was kicked out of Harvard for cheating. 47 years later, the man is still in the United States Senate. And what I'm reminded of when I think about Caroline Kennedy running is one of the most famous moments in Massachusetts political history. And this happened when Ted Kennedy, he actually had to debate his Democratic primary opponent back in 1962 when he first went into the Senate, and he stared him down. This was in a sweaty, packed to the rafters, South Boston High School gymnasium, where his opponent, who was the Attorney General of Massachusetts, a guy by the name of Eddie McCormick, basically almost made Ted Kennedy cry. He looked at him and he said, "Look, if your name were Edward Moore instead of Edward Moore Kennedy, your candidacy would be a joke." Now, 47 years later, people looking at Caroline Kennedy in New York, they're saying the same thing. If her name were Caroline Schlossberg instead of Caroline Kennedy Schlossberg, her candidacy would be a joke. And you know what? Her candidacy is a joke. The joke is on you. Thank you, Michael Savage. Thank you, Savage Nation. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Daniel. Great comparison.
Savage.
We've been talking about Gaza this week. The conflict between Israel, the West, and the Islamo-fascist is difficult to understand without first understanding the hate-filled mindset of these radical throwback terrorists. Joining us today is a former PLO operative and author, Waleed Shubat, who now speaks out against the aggression and hatred towards Israel that was taught to him from a very young age. Waleed Shubat, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. It's been a while since we talked last time.
Tell us about your new book.
My new book is God's War on Terror, Understanding Islam and Eschatology, as well as Western thoughts of eschatology, because most Westerners do not understand that the reason Islamists have declared war against the West and Israel is regarding an eschatological view that they held from the eons of time, in which the Prophet of Islam himself declared that the day of judgment shall not come to pass until the tribes of Islam defeat the tribes of Israel in Jerusalem and the surrounding nations. And then the trees and the stones will cry out, "There is a Jew hiding behind me. Come, O Muslim, come and kill him." So when people ask me the question of what is happening regarding Hamas's attack on Israel, rarely does the news media set forth the fact that it is a final solution, that Hamas attempts the final solution on the Jewish people. Yet the victims of the Holocaust decided to defend themselves establish a state and fight back this final solution are rarely ever given the chance in the media to express their view that it is the final cleansing of the Jewish people that is intended by groups like Hamas and Hezbollah in Lebanon and the entire Islamist view. It comes and it stems from not just the religious perspective, because most Westerners do not understand that Islam is not merely a religion, but Islam is also a form of government. Islam is a constitution. So when Keith Ellison swears in the Quran, he is not swearing to honor the Constitution of the United States of America, but he is swearing to honor his constitution, which is the Islamic constitution. This is why all the political things that he does is anti-America and anti-West.
Tell us about your background.
My roots stem from being born of an American mother and a Palestinian father. My mother ended up 35 years held captive against her will in the Middle East, in which most Westerners don't understand that in 57 Muslim states, not a single Muslim state is signatory to the Hague Convention regarding the abduction of women and children. So she was prevented from teaching her children the American values and teaching them Christianity, since she was herself a Christian. So I ended up living in the Middle East, and against my mother's will, of course, I was taught everything that I was taught from childhood. My father's family stems from my grandfather, who was friends with Hajj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the Supreme Muslim Council, who was nicknamed by Adolf Hitler as the Führer of the Arab world. This is not some small cookie.
Mm-hmm.
He collaborated with Hitler.
Oh, my God.
He collaborated with Hitler and founded the two divisions out of the eight divisions of the Nazi war machine. Most Westerners do not understand that two of these divisions were Muslim fundamentalists, the Bosnian division and the Albanian division, which wreaked havoc among Christians and Jews. And so this is the part from my father's side. And my mother's side, my great-grandfather was the mayor of Eureka, California, an excellent friend of Winston Churchill, who wanted nothing but the destruction of Nazism. So you can see my childhood growing up between my mother and my father. I was caught in the middle. In the end, I discovered that my mother was right, but it took a long journey to realize. As we learned since we were children, that the Holocaust was a fabrication, that the Jews suffering in the Holocaust was a gimmick and a plan by the Zionist agenda in order to establish a state. In fact, the Prime Minister of the Palestinians, Mahmoud Abbas, who's considered a moderate, has written his thesis in his graduation denying the Holocaust. Of course, we all know that Mahmoud Abbas does the same. The question I always ask is, what causes us to deny the Holocaust? The fact is that you will never find a book in a library in any of the Muslim countries in the Middle East that teach about the Holocaust. And this is the biggest problem that we have in understanding the true history and the true nature of what happened in that part of the history of mankind.
What do you want people to take away from your book?
What I want them to understand is that the West lives in a myth. The myth that Islam is simply a religion is not true. Islam is Sharia law. In fact, in Great Britain, they've established Islamic courts in which Muslims can go and deal with their cases. Terrorism is not an isolated phenomenon. When my cousin Raed, a 16-year-old boy, went to Ben Yehuda Street and attempted to blow up Jews and kill civilians, when he was killed by the Israelis, my aunt Fatima hailed him as a martyr. In fact, the entire community was part and parcel of supporting the martyrdom of my own cousin. You would see placards on the walls of the streets of the city depicting him as Rambo, fighting for the cause of Allah. The local mosque will be hailing him as a martyr. My aunt's house becomes a museum. So Westerners don't understand that when 20,000 Egyptians set up a pogrom in Egypt, especially in during this Mumbai attack, you would think that Muslims would denounce the Mumbai attack, yet when in reality 20,000 set up a pogrom in Egypt attempting to kill Christians. No one asks about the suffering of the Christians in Gaza itself, in which the only Christian bookstore, a man by the name of Rami, shot, and a church in Gaza bombed. No one talks about the suffering of the Assyrian Christians in Iraq. No one talks about the suffering of the Coptic Christians in Egypt or the suffering of the Palestinian Christians in Bethlehem. Everybody wants to talk about how Israel is bad and how Israel is evil and how Israel supposedly has the strength over Hamas that it needs to kind of take it easy on the civil population. No one knows that the civil population of Gaza itself is part and parcel of the militia apparatus of Hamas. The people themselves support the agenda. They harbor the terrorists. They allow them to launch the rockets from their territory. They allow them to make the bombs in their homes. No one knows that Islam is not simply a peaceful religion, as everybody says. When the Pope critiqued Islam and he said Islam must never be spread through violence, the Muslim world went in havoc in demonstrations by the millions in the streets. How dare the Pope say what he said? Yet the expression of the peacefulness of Islam was expressed through sheer violence by killing nuns and attacking churches all throughout the Muslim world. The West does not recognize that the war has been declared on us long time ago. The West does not recognize that it's not the Iraqi occupation of the American occupation of Iraq or Israel's so-called occupation of Palestine is the reason for this war that was declared on us. But in 1924, when the fall of the Ottoman Empire and the Caliphate was removed, you must think that 4 years later, the Muslim Brotherhood was born and jihadism was set in motion. When communist Russia fell apart, we aided the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to remove the communist threat, which gave birth to the Taliban. The West needs to recognize that supporting the lesser of the two evils is not the solution. That supporting the PA over Hamas is not the solution, because the PA has a branch called Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which hails nothing but fundamental Islam, bombing Jews and blowing themselves up. The West doesn't understand the reason why Muslims want to blow themselves up. The West doesn't ask the question why three-quarters of all suicide bombing that happens exist in Muslim countries that have virtually no occupation whatsoever. The West doesn't understand that this is a salvation plan that has been inculcating our minds from childhood. A salvation plan in which Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam himself, said that by the martyr's blood, by the first drop of his blood, not only he will enter paradise, but he will become an intercessor for 70 members of his or her family. It is a salvation plan that says that you must die for the cause of Allah. Thank God that in 1993 I read the Bible, and I read the words of Jesus in which he said, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, that God already has done this for me. He martyred himself on my behalf.
Well, why does the West not understand this?
The West has been conditioned through the media. Whenever you want to critique Islam, you are nicknamed as an Islamophobe. When I used to be working part and parcel of the terror agenda under the PLO and as well under the Hamas apparatus, before it was called Hamas, it was the Muslim Brotherhood, active in Chicago. It was called the IEP, Islamic Association of Palestine. In fact, my mentor Jamal Saeed still runs a mosque in Bridgeview, Illinois. This inculcation began from the early 80s in the West as well, that this kind of system have inculcated 90% of the mosques in America. In fact, the Mumbai attacks were funded from monies that were raised from Great Britain. The West doesn't understand. It is the political apparatus of Islam that we need to address, not just simply the explosive act. Because when it comes to terrorism, the West thinks that terrorism is simply the explosive act. Jihad comes through three stages: the financial stage, the political stage, and then the jihad act itself. When I used to be active in Chicago, and I was making demonstrations in the streets of Chicago condemning Israel and America, the media called us freedom fighters. Yet the moment that I began to express my view as a Christian, calling the Islamic movement what it is, the media nicknamed us as Islamophobes, bigoted, divisive, racist, fundamentalist, Bible-thumping Christians. I began to realize that these kind of names that they gave us, I should take those as a badge of honor and continue my mission, as Brother Savage does, in fighting and defending this country, to save this country and restore our freedom the way it used to be.
Waleed Shubat, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you as well, Brother Savage, for standing strong and standing tall especially in the conditions that is going on in the world arena.
This is the Savage Nation. Savage.
Let me close by doing something that I probably won't do much after this, but I feel like doing it again since I did it not too long ago. I want to quote another British poet. Though we are not now the strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and by fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Thank you.
Blagojevich rhymes with itch. He can be quite a stitch. He plays the victim, marches shills, gives reporters, not crowds, their thrills. Blagojevich got caught his hand in till. He now quotes poets who make land fill. Blagojevich, his hand in till, uses illegals to act as shills. This one I saved from cancer. That one a kidney got. Yet those evil politicians, my friends last year, would not even give the poor devils even their ear. Blagojevich, which rhymes with itch, has run himself into a ditch. There was a young man from Chicago who tried to unload some cargo. Unable to be terse, he fell back on verse. I'm working on that one, guys. I'll finish that a little later.
I took actions with the advice of lawyers and experts to find ways to get real things done for people. I don't believe those are impeachable offenses.
Here's what we've been talking about today in the Savage Nation. One, the madness of Rod Blagojevich. The Democrats have saddled themselves with yet another madman, Rod Blagojevich. Can you imagine? This man has been running Illinois. He was impeached today and then gets up in front of the press with a crowd right out of Lourdes Cathedral, homeless people in wheelchairs, and essentially claims he saved their life and that only those who oppose the poor and who are racists oppose him, only because he helped these poor, unfortunate people. Does Rod Blagojevich sum up the entire strategy of the Democrat Party to appeal to the lowest common denominator, the illegal alien? The streets here. They came to San Francisco. Drive down Turk Street, you'll see where they are. Well, other than the hippies who became the supervisors, take a look at the streets of the city, what they do to the poor here. They make believe they care about the homeless. They don't care about the homeless. If they were truly humane, they would round up the homeless. They would give them the treatment that they need, which is a good bath, first of all. They'd burn their clothing. They would put them on Thorazine or whatever the current crop of chemicals is to stop the psychosis. They would feed them, and then they'd make them work for their living instead of sitting around and making movies about the homeless experience. But the phony liberal is the empty liberal. The empty liberal, they're full of rhetoric and hot air. They don't really care about the poor or the homeless. They use it as a fulcrum to get attention and to get ahead in society and make a living off them. You know, I drove last night down this Van Ness Avenue. If you're not from here, you don't know where it is. I've never seen more bums in my life, more than when I first got here in 1974, and dirtier and more wrecked than in 1974. And they're a product of the whole hippie come to San Francisco with a flower in your hair. But there are good things. There are hardworking people. There's great food. There's great food. I mean, from the I told you the fish piccata I had the other night in my friend's restaurant. I mean, great Italian food. And then I had a corned beef sandwich last night, which I have once a year. I was in like a depression after yesterday's show because of the terrible news and the disconnect between the ruling elite, so-called, and what's going on in the world. The New World Order, the managers of the New World Order scare me to death because of the movie The Skull and Bones, to realize how vacuous they probably are. The fact that dollars roll as the world's reserve currency is eroding because of the trade imbalance with China, and so that the oil-producing zillionaires are starting to hedge their bets against a further fall in the dollar, and they're demanding euros and British pounds instead. These are worrisome events. Don't you understand that? So I figured since it all may come down faster than I think, and I won't die an old man in bed, I may as well have a corned beef sandwich. That's how I evaluated it. So I drove to the depths of a place I know on Van Ness. I never saw such bums in my life. You literally need, A, a pair of galoshes to walk past the filth in the street, and B, an armed guard to go in and out to go to your car. You take your life in your hands. This is not a city that I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I don't get it. They could clean this up. They can get the bums off the street. Most tourists hate it. But you talk about hippies, you know. The ultimate hippie is a dog. A dog it lives like a hippie when you think about it. That's why we love dogs. It's the hippie within all of us. The difference, though, is that a dog doesn't vote and doesn't vote in Nancy Pelosi. A dog just lays there and wants to be fed like a hippie. A dog just wants to play all day just like a hippie. And we're happy to let a dog play and feed it all day long because it provides something to us. It gives us loyalty, which a hippie doesn't. It doesn't use drugs, so therefore it's a reliable hippie. A dog is a reliable hippie. The druggies are not. They're red diaper doper babies. Well, I began today with a poem about Blagojevich, and I ended with a poem that was in the works. There was a young man from Chicago who tried to unload some cargo. Unable to be terse, he fell back on verse. I'm still working on that one. But you can work on michaelsavage.com by going to the website. On the top, I lightened it up. I have worst celebrity beach bodies put out by the New York Post. Leading, of course, is Clint Eastwood. What's amazing to me is how these ordinary mortals look like ordinary mortals when they're caught without the pancake makeup and the staging and the lighting and the acting and the controlling. It's unbelievable to me. I feel much better today. I'm not going to work on my abs. In fact, I had two lunches today instead of one. I think I'm in better shape than Clint. Who would have known? Illinois House of Representatives, a wonderful group of men and women, impeached someone lower than them, and that's Governor Rod Blagojevich, a man who would make Al Capone turn over in shame in some ways. Powerful solar storm could shut down the U.S. for months. I guess they need money, but the National Academy of Sciences has outlined the grim possibility on Earth for a worst-case scenario solar storm that'll knock out all of our electricity and computers and even our toasters. Obama camp is ready to talk to Hamas. Good luck, Obama. Madoff victims did the math and realized that many of them profited. You didn't know that. They're not all victims. U.S. government plans a surge if Mexican bloodshed crosses the border. That is the drug wars you're hearing nothing about. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.